On today's edition of Sunday Morning Linux Review, which is actually Saturday, we have a special guest in the studio, Tom Lawrence, and we'll listen to Tom talk about his business and some of the projects and some of the customer situations that he encounters and how he fixes things. We'll also have our typical news. Matt will be here with what, Matt?
Yeah, I'll kick in two stories. One on a Linux rootkit. Ooh, scary stuff, huh?
Maybe.
And open office development is losing out to LibreOffice.
Yeah, and I guess I'll have something on the deal with the devil as far as Russia and China. And Tony will be here with, Tony's got a little challenge for us today.
Yeah, so listen up.
Yeah.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review. Starring Mary Talbot, Tony Demas, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And this is Tony Demas,
Matt Anders,
and Mary Tomich.
And this is episode 151. And we have a guest with us today.
Tom Lawrence.
That's right.
Hey, Tom.
From LawrenceSystems.com.
All right.
There we go.
Yep, and if you listen to the PodNuts shows, you've been on a couple of those, right?
Correct.
All right, very cool. So we've known each other for like a year or so on Facebook,
yeah.
But we only met last at Facebook.
PenguinCon, I think.
Or, yeah. Yeah.
At Facebook. That's what we said.
Yeah, and what's our episode name?
Oh, I don't know. We didn't even talk about it. That's what episode name.
We did not discuss the episode name.
We'll come up with it during the show. We'll pick a sound.
Yeah.
I think Mary's probably got something in mind.
Well, no, I just put a guest and then an exclamation point.
Yeah, no.
That's the last resort one, in case we don't come up with anything better. You know how that goes.
So we've changed our live recording today because tomorrow's Mother's Day, and I kind of messed up Mary's plans. I'm really sorry.
Yeah, I was at a port tasting party and port wine.
Hey,
that sounds good.
Yeah,
unless you brought some for us, Mary. I don't want to hear about it.
I didn't. I drank it. And then I had to get up early, so I had to leave.
I'm sorry, Mary.
That's all right.
That's my fault, but...
I know. I'm keeping track.
Another check mark.
Another check mark. I just got a long way to go to catch up with you, Matt.
Yeah, well, I live for those check marks.
Anyway, so... Yeah.
So what else is new with you, Mary?
Well, I sprained my foot. And I'm supposed to have a walking boot on, but I just...
That's a bad sprain.
Which means I don't drive, yeah. So I have it on it was my right foot. I'm not going to go into details about how it happened, but it had to do with stairs and something on the step and me not seeing it and my foot.
It wasn't that wacky step on that you've got.
No, on my... No. That was over my...
I almost fell twice going down these stairs.
You know, man, I think I'm going to put some...
The one by the bathroom?
No,
this is upstairs.
You've never been on these stairs.
Oh, no, I haven't.
Yeah.
Going up to the third floor.
There's like a landing.
It turns halfway up, but instead of it being a landing where it turns,
There's a diagonal step. Yeah. It's kind of a half diagonal step.
And yeah, I almost came crashing down, and Mary was leading the way, so I'd have bashed into her, and both of us would have wound up in a heap.
You would have
bashed.
I get it. Anyway, so that was it. But, another thing I did too is, you know, last weekend I was up in Minnesota, and a friend of mine's computer, she and I had communicated a bit last year about what to do with this computer because it was running Windows XP, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, so when I was up there, I ended up putting TarPup, you know, one of the Puppy Linux
What distros. Were the resources available on this?
512.
Only 512?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Even for XP, that's way underpowered.
Yeah. It was it's an HP... one of the HP laptops.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so it had 60 gig hard drive. Wow. Yeah, so it was
this like running XP 1 or something?
No. No. It kind of limited what I could do, as far as what distros to put on it. So I spent a little bit of last Saturday, getting that set up for her. So I'm hoping that works out. I told her if she doesn't like it, ship me the laptop. I'll put something else on it.
Well, if you put RAM in it.
Well, you know, that's another thing, too, because we could probably do that. You know, I didn't really think about putting more RAM in it.
I mean, the processor's probably going to be a big dog, but...
Yeah, but if you got more RAM, you know, that sometimes masks problems.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a big difference.
So, but anyway, so yeah, so that's one thing I did. I also upgraded my netbook to Kubuntu 15.04. Now, that's somewhat of an underpowered machine, you know, that little, I don't know if you've seen that Asus netbook I have.
Yes.
And, you know, when you're running a full distro like that on a netbook that's got 2 gigs of RAM.
I don't know. Up until it was stolen from my van, I ran a full distro on that one I
that
bought from
baby,
you.
That little baby EPC?
Yeah.
Huh. Mm. Yeah, well.
And that had only a gig of RAM, I think.
Okay.
I mean, I used to run lightweight ones, but they would be full distros.
That was three years ago, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it got stolen out of my van like 3 years ago. So.
Okay, but anyway, so I did upgrade it, and I'm a little disappointed with it, but I think it's due more to, you know, when Kubuntu, the last time they went up to KDE 4, and there were some things, I mean, there seemed to be some things missing as far as some of the features that I like to tweak on my desktop or, you know, my screen. So those weren't available. There were not many themes. I couldn't seem to download themes, so I'm just going to not... upgrade any other of my machines to Kubuntu 15.04 until I see some changes there.
You know, you could always just dump Kubuntu.
Well, and actually, Matt, that crossed my mind because, you know, I've been talking about moving more of my stuff over to BSD, but I could move that desktop to FreeBSD. It's a 32-bit system, and so I think FreeBSD will run on it.
Oh, yeah.
But PCBSD won't run on it because
there's no 32-bit version of PCBSD.
Exactly.
But PCBSD is just tweaked.
Yes.
FreeBSD.
With some extra, you know, utilities and things,
and stuff,
things
yeah.
on there for the desktop. Or, you know, not a server. But anyway, so I'm kind of thinking about that. So I don't know what's going to happen, but stay tuned.
You could, you know, I think Dragonfly might make a 32-bit version.
Yeah.
You should look at Dragonfly.
Yeah. As long as I can do my video editing and just those kinds of things on it, then we should be good. But you know, out at PenguCon, you attended the OpenBSD session? Did you, were you there in
yes.
that? Okay. And, they were talking, I think I asked a question about, what you can really do with an OpenBSD system, and they kind of waxed effusive about, you can do everything with it. I mean, you can.
Yeah, because they were running it as their desktop.
But they never really show it that way. And I think when they show it.
Well, because
purely
nobody who's sane uses it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's sane uses it only
as a server.
Well, mostly actually on network routing equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of that, not that I want to just hog this whole section of the show, but at my party that I was at last night, I was talking to somebody. We were talking about open source software. He's an attorney, and before he became an attorney, he had worked for this mining company, and they had used OpenBSD for some aspect of that whole operation, as far as, you know, the technical side of it. But they couldn't ship. They had mines in the U.S. They had mines overseas, but they couldn't ship. Because of the encryption.
Oh yeah,
restriction.
That was back under that old cryptology.
Yeah,
thing.
He was telling me they couldn't at the time ship it overseas to
wow.
other facilities.
So. Oh, because that's munitions, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. But the other overseas, so. They could download it from a local mirror.
So yeah. But anyway, so that's kind of what was going on with me.
Cool, Matt. Anything new?
Yeah, no.
No. All right.
Yeah, you came over to my house and...
Oh, yeah, I looked at putting that...
Quick, we better fill in what comes next. We don't want to create any bad impressions
here. That network
here.
Drop-in that Mary wants, and it's not actually going to be that hard. Most of it's going to be done inside a crawl space.
Oh, nice.
In her eaves, so...
All right.
Yeah, on the third floor.
Have to put some surface mount raceway up, and so we can get the Cat 3 into that crawl space area, but then...
Yeah.
And, oh, we can't do it in one jack. Remember
We
have to put two side by side.
Okay, because I guess it comes in as Cat 3, and it's got to end up Cat 5.
Right, because we're relocating the modem also.
Yeah.
So the Cat 3 is going to have to go all the way to the...
Across the way.
Yeah, to where her desk is. and then come out and go to the modem, and then the Cat 5 is going to have to go back from the modem into the wall to go downstairs where she wants the jack.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have U-verse, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's actually a Cat 5 cable that they run. You want to run
no,
Cat 5 the whole way?
We looked at the,
it's not.
Matt looked
really?
At the
yes.
jack.
They didn't run any new wire at all. They used the existing wire.
Oh,
they did
I see.
The same thing in my house when I had U-verse put in.
Although I would suggest if you're moving it or running a new cable,
I'm not.
I would. Oh, okay. I
I'm
would
just
still suggest
the existing
Cat
yeah.
5, but
I'm just extending the existing cable.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're saying would there be a performance improvement? And
no.
I'm not. I would contact them and work.
Well,
with them.
Yeah, no.
I wouldn't say no. It wouldn't be performance improvement. It's just
okay.
it would be for future forward is what it would
well,
be.
Okay. Yeah, future forward, and then if there's any kind of crosstalk that could happen, that Cat 5 is better with crosstalk with reducing Cat crosstalk,
mm-hmm. okay.
Than Cat 3.
There'll be no crosstalk.
There'll be no change from what you have now, though.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
So that's what Matt did.
All right. you know, this week I'm going to Army training.
Don't.
No. Well, that's what my workers, my coworkers call it Army training. I'm going for my CCNA boot camp.
Oh.
For people that don't know what those letters mean, what is that?
CCNA is the Cisco Certified Network Associate.
Oh, I was probably the only one that didn't know that then.
So I will, right now, yeah. My job is working, on switches and routers at work. And, I'm not certified yet. And my boss said, for my position, I don't have to be certified, but for the next position I want to go to, I do.
Oh, good.
So they're paying for it, so I'm going for it.
Where is it going to be?
If I remember correctly, the CCNA is like the Red Hat certs, and they expire every 3 years, right? You have to retest every 3 years?
Yeah. 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 There's an expiration. I don't know what the time frame is. I got to look that up, but.
Is this locally then, or are you traveling somewhere?
It's actually virtual. I can do it anywhere I want.
Oh, okay.
They said I could do it at home, but it's not going to work with kids and family.
No,
that's here all the time.
Yep.
So I'm getting a quiet desk at work, away from everyone else,
mm-hmm.
and sit down. And if that doesn't work for Monday,
put a sign
then
on your door
I'm going
that
to a different hospital and getting a room by myself and.
Yeah.
Ooh, in a hospital bed, and sit it up, and
check in.
Hey, and then Tony, get a commode because then you don't have to leave the room at all.
Well, those hospital rooms have bathrooms in them,
right?
Oh, you could just do it in the bathroom. Set your laptop up on the sink.
All right, we're not going any further down that path.
No. But if you're not familiar with what a boot camp is, it's intensive training for an entire year of training you would do at a college, all crammed into
1 week?
One week, five days.
Wow.
I like that.
Yeah. And I haven't done one before, so this is kind of new for me. But I've already studied and I've gone through all the training and the studying for the Cisco stuff. I just need a couple of new things they've added in the last 10 years since I've taken my training.
Uh-huh.
They also give me a lot of study materials and practice tests and stuff, and mm-hmm. it all is included. And they pay for the part of this training is they're paying for me to take the test and for a retake. If I miss it the first time, then I can retake it again. So it's
sounds
that's
like
cool
fun.
If they're paying for the retake because a lot of places won't.
Yeah, yeah,
you
that's
get it right, or you're gonna it's out of pocket.
My company
exactly.
mm-hmm. will pay for the only cert they'll pay for. Well, unless you ask them, because they have paid for other certs. But the cert they like to pay for is the Red Hat certs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the way it was presented to me was, we'll pay for the first one, and we'll pay for the second one. And then if you need to take it a third time, we'll have a talk.
Right. All right. So that's going to be my next week coming up. And it's 9 to 9 every day, 12 hours.
Wow.
So it's going to be...
That's intense.
Yeah, it's going to be intense.
They
actually write in it. It says it's CCNAX Intense Boot Camp Training. That's the name of it.
When you start pushing it like that, you get really focused on it. You know?
Yeah.
Is it one of those guaranteed pass?
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, they have labs and stuff even afterwards. For a year, I can have access to labs to be able to take the test. But I plan on taking the test within the couple weeks after taking the training. And that's what everybody tells me. Don't wait to do it, because either you won't do it or you'll forget a lot of stuff. And
right, there those cram courses like that are meant to be so you take the test right away and then you pass the test and then you forget it all anyway.
Yeah. So that was it. So Tom, anything new with you going on the last couple weeks?
One of the things that impressed me last night or yesterday evening was updating my longest installed server, which is my mail server. I installed it in November of 2004, and I've done in-place upgrades of Debian ever since.
Wow.
And I've very minimal modification of files for things that have been deprecated. The only thing that broke after this upgrade was Apache. Apparently, the lock file has been deprecated. I think I was getting warnings before. I just had to comment out one line, and it started back up. And I was just kind of blown away by this. I'm like, that's 11 years of updates in place.
When I had my own business, too. I exclusively used Debian on my servers because the in-place upgrades are great. Only one time did I get really screwed, and that was due to when Samba switched from the flat file to TDB SAM. I didn't read the release notes, and I screwed a client. So I had spent 3 days there. 24 hours through a day, 3 days there to get them fixed and back up and running.
Wow. Yeah, Samba didn't break, but I think I've been good at keeping up the changes on that, because I do have Samba on my mail server where I was copying files back and forth to it, and it runs Apache just for a webmail interface. So I hardly use that anymore. It just doesn't work well. It's too many. I have too much email in there.
Yeah, with my schools, I used to use it as a domain controller in a file server.
Cool. Well, I guess we're going to go on to
Matt. What's happening with the kernel?
Matt.
And it's time for the kernel news. The mainline is 4.1-RC2, released on 5.4. And then the newest stable kernel is 4.0.2, released on 5.6. Then we have stable kernel 3.19.7, released on 5.6. Long-term kernel 3.18.13, released on 5.5. Long-term kernel 3.14.41, released on 5.6. Long-term kernel 3.12.42, released on 5.4. Long-term kernel 3.10.77, released on 5.6. And that's all for the kernel news.
Thank you, Matt. So have you heard of any distros moving to the 4 kernel yet? The 4.0?
What's OpenSUSE's rolling version?
Tumbleweed.
I think that they're on it.
Are they?
I believe I saw something to that effect this past week.
I have not seen anything in the news. Let me...
Fedora's not on it?
I don't know. I'm seeing.
All right. Well, I guess while you're looking at that...
No, 3.19.5.
Yeah, because you just did a new install on your laptop, right?
Yes.
What version of Fedora?
21.
21, all right. All right, and now we're going on to...
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
The distros. So last week we left off with, Magia?
No,
I can't remember.
And that's I think the first one that we're going to cover, actually, it's the very end of April, because you remember our last episode was at PenguinCon, and there were several April days after that. And I believe that our first one is QoS. Oh, no, not QoS? Cube. No, you know, actually, speaking of cubes, hang on just a second, Tony. They just had a release candidate come out for Cubes 3. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's a very cool... security distro.
All right.
Yeah, all right. Yep, so first off, we have on 4.26, we have Q4OS 1.2, and they are based on Debian 8. So it's the new release.
Yeah, and actually, I'm sorry, Tony, did you have something else to say about that?
They're running the Trinity desktop, which is pretty interesting. That's lightweight, right?
I think that's, I want to say it's like the KDE 3.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
But they also introduced with this release a new logo. I don't know if you saw that or not, but their previous one was basically just the Q4 OS and without any kind of, you know, graphic associated with it. And so now they've got a nice looking little logo.
Cool.
One thing too, initial users of this updated version had reported some disk space being eaten up. I guess it was some various incidents were being logged, and you know, and Matt, you've talked about that.
Oh yeah,
kind of
the runaway log files.
Yeah,
most of the time with us it's modsec, but.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, but yeah, that's kind of what's going on with them.
All right. Next up on the 27th, we have Backbox Linux 4.2, and they're Ubuntu based for penetration testing and forensics.
Yeah, you know, and some distros are foregoing the 32-bit versions, but these guys still have theirs available, so that's kind of good. And you know, their system requirements are pretty modest. Hey, this is maybe what I should have put on my friend's laptop: 512 mega RAM, 6 gig of disk space.
You don't want to install for every day.
Yeah, no, I know.
Penetration of forensics testing.
I know, it was a joke. So anyway.
All right. Next up on the 28th, we have Midnight BSD 0.6, and they're based on FreeBSD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, they spun off Midnight BSD, I think, when FreeBSD 6.1 was released a few years ago. And I believe this particular version of Midnight BSD, ZFS, that the file system was imported into it. Not this version. I think it was back at 0.3 it was imported. And they've got it set up where it can be used in two ways. You can either dedicate the entire disk, or you can use GPT partitions. And I think we've mentioned before that the project maintainer is in Ann Arbor. I don't know if he's still working at the University of Michigan, but he's based in Ann Arbor.
Oh, that's cool.
Should be a good interview op sometime.
Yeah. You're the BSD girl, why don't you?
I think I should. Actually, I think I should actually review this, and then maybe we can interview him.
But there's a flaw in this OpenSSL version that a specially crafted packet can cause it to just gobble RAM until the system crashes.
Wow.
So, yeah, OpenSSL. Gotta love it, huh?
All right, next up we have Deepin 2014.3, and they're also Ubuntu-based, and I don't know what's...
Well, one of the things they did is they changed, I don't know if they mentioned it there in DistroWatch, but they kind of changed the look of their name. It went to all lowercase.
Yeah.
And
wonder what's with that.
I don't know. I guess they just maybe wanted to be consistent. But they did mention on their site when I took a look, that the upgrade script, that if you want to use the upgrade script, it only supports versions, of Deepin, 2014.1 or 2014.2. So if you're using an earlier version, the script that they've got for upgrading won't work.
Mm.
So, and apparently this release also has quite a few, optimizations. So.
Yes, and languages. Deepin supports 23 different languages. And when they support languages, that means they try and do it with all the docs. So almost all of their docs are also available in all of those 23 languages.
Wow.
Mm.
Nice.
Wow. All
right, next up we have, I'm not sure if I can say this right.
Chromixium,
yeah. OS 1.0. So this is the first time I've seen it on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever been here before.
No, and actually last weekend, this was one that I was going to try to install on my friend's laptop.
Because
I hit DistroWatch to look, but I had a problem downloading it.
The system requirements are probably pretty light for it.
Well, it's Ubuntu-based, but made to look like Chrome OS.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and it sounds like they went this route. They released the distro, and now they're going to shift their attention to start working on the documentation, so... they've apparently got some, helpful guidebooks, and they've also got their wiki site set up. So, as you continue to check on this, I think it's going to grow and grow.
All right. Next up we have is Simplicity Linux 15.4, and they're a lightweight puppy-based Linux distro for desktops and netbooks.
Yep. Lightweight? Simple.
Yeah.
Simplicity.
We were talking about OpenBSD earlier, weren't we?
Yes, with we were.
That. Yeah, and they have a release, OpenBSD 5.7.
Yep.
And you know what's neat about OpenBSD? Every time they have a release, is they have a song.
Yeah. Did you listen to the? Well, you did, Meg.
I did.
You sent it out.
Yeah.
But I like that song.
I know. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty good. So we may.
Yeah. I think every time there's an OpenBSD release, that should be our outro music.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's our. We'll start that off.
You know,
maybe
when we were in
week.
That talk. They were playing some music before they started, and it was the OpenBSD songs.
Mm-hmm.
And the one song was like a blues song, and it said it's an open fish or open source fish.
That's the current one.
Yeah. Well, every time it was saying it, I didn't realize that's what they were playing, and I thought it was saying open source bit. It's a fish. B-I.
Oh, hey, speaking of that. Oh, well, actually, as soon as the distro's over, you know, before we get to the interview, that little revenue thing I mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Got to get that out.
Right, okay.
When should I do it?
Yeah, right. That's a good time.
Right after. Okay, we'll do it.
All right. Before right. or after the...
Right after we do our distro segment,
so,
before we get into interviewing Tom.
So after we do the top five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. And next up we have is RoboLinux 7.9.1, and they're Debian-based, and with an option of virtual machine pack compatible of running Windows and Windows applications.
Yeah, they got... I'll tell you, I'm trying to figure out how many different... versions of that distro they've got. Tony, I hope you're not contagious.
I'm sorry. I should have turned the other way.
Yeah,
I'm not contagious. Yeah,
he's definitely contagious, Mary. Thank you for being my shield.
Yeah, he looks at us and
I'm down here.
Tom, you're in the best spot. Well, actually, if I were sending in my car, that would be the best spot.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, they like to credit their users with for asking for more privacy and security applications, so they loaded them up on this version.
Mm. All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, next up is the SMS, or the Superb Mini Server 2.0.8, and they're Slackware-based for, back office, small office stuff.
They indicated, too, with this particular release, if you're running own cloud on your server, that apparently curl has been updated in this release from 7.37.0 up to 7.42.1. But if you're running own cloud, you should skip the curl update because it breaks the own cloud server.
Oh no!
Minor inconvenience there.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's a little heads up.
All right. Here's one of our favorite Linux distros.
Can you do it? Can you do it, Tony?
Drum roll.
I can't remember now.
Come on.
Maka Lulu.
No.
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 Maklulu.
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 So what's going on with Maklulu?
They have an XFCE release.
They do.
It's their light edition.
Yeah. And by the way, just to add a couple other things to it, they've got, and we've talked about this briefly, they've got that Maklulu constructor, which is a way to build the ISO, and they used it to build this release, and they include it so that if you want to clone or you want to basically take a snapshot of your release and use it as a backup in case something happens, you can do it through their constructor.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it is pretty nice.
Yeah. I think, though, with this release, they're really trying to punk their users.
Why?
Because it looks exactly like their full-blown version, but comes with almost no software installed.
Oh, they do. They've got, I think they've got the normal edition and their kind of light edition where you get the base system and then you can customize it.
They look exactly the same.
Oh. Yeah. They've got, by the way, too, Netflix and Popcorn Time now are fully supported in the normal edition, which is the pre-installed edition.
I've heard
edition.
About this Popcorn Time. What the heck is that?
I think it's a movie finder kind of thing where you can find movies online and watch them. I don't know for sure because I've never used it.
I got Netflix. I'm happy.
I've never heard of that.
I use Netflix and I like it. I mean, once I got it working in Linux, it just is great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I had to do that one where you switched your browser and your browser identified that it was running on Windows, and then you could use it in Linux.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Now all you got to do is run it in Chrome on Linux, and they're fine.
Cool. I think there was a PPA that you had to download some kind of a little program.
That was the one where you had to switch the browser.
Yeah.
Yeah, they finally moved away from Silverlight.
Right.
That's what it was.
That was the dependency that was on there. And as I understood, that was actually a big push from the movie studios because they felt as though a Microsoft DRM product would be secure and no one could rip off the movies.
Sure.
So that's why they used it. It was not because they wanted to.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Sam.
And last on our list is TinyCore Linux 6.2. And they're the world's smallest Linux distro.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
They're very small.
Only
and
12.
I once tried to build a thin clients with this for a client.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work
How'd
out.
How'd that go?
It didn't work out. I was trying to use them to RDP connect to servers and get the desktops delivered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I wound up using I stripped down Windows 2000 and used that instead.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool. And now on to the top five of the week.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
And at number five, we have Fedora with 1073.
And trending down.
At number four, we have OpenSUSE with 1201.
And trending down.
And number three is Ubuntu with 1722.
And trending down.
In the number two spot is Debian with 2194.
And trending down.
And in the number one spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 3083.
And trending down.
Huh.
All right.
They all were trending down.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
From six up is trending down. You have to get down to seven. Makalulu. Before you're trending up.
Good thing that well. Makulu. I had such high hopes.
I just have to,
We have to give Tony
Thanks,
a
Matt. Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Anyway, before we jump into our next segment, this is something I actually should have mentioned earlier. We always are grateful when listeners send us little donations and that type of thing because
yes.
It helps us replace aging equipment, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I discovered a great revenue generating opportunity.
Oh, no.
That will
a swear jar. Are we really going to institute a swear jar?
Are you kidding me, Matt?
What?
Did you see this?
I did not, no.
That's exactly what it is. I figure it's...
$5 a pop or what?
I figure, I don't know if you can see that out there, folks in YouTube land, but this is a swear jar. It's got all the kinds of little swear symbols on there, and it says, if you say it, you must pay it. And I figure with Matt, we probably will be up a couple $100 in no time.
We'll be redoing the whole studio shortly.
So anyway, I just thought this would be a great money-making opportunity. I can't believe
Can
you guessed it.
Can I just pay $20 in advance?
Yeah. Yeah, we figure a dollar each time.
Oh, you're going to be easy.
I have $2 in my pocket, but and they'll be staying in my pocket.
Yeah, here. Wait a minute. I'm going to pay in advance.
No.
Figure how much swearing can go on.
I can't believe he guessed it.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Is it because you saw the box and you guessed?
No. Here, that should cover me for
about
a week.
God.
Wow.
That should cover me two broadcasts.
Oh, my God. Are you joking?
No.
Come on.
Put it in there.
All right.
Hey.
All right. I'm putting the three $5 bills in there. Now, Matt believes he has the right to swear.
I can freaking swear all I want.
Oh, no.
Until the $15 is used up. Get ready to bleep, Tony.
Oh, my God. All right. So, anyway, that was my little
This may have been a bad idea for you guys.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm thinking it might backfire. All right. Well, that was my little bleep.
All right. So, this week, we asked Tom to come on because... He actually lives right in the area, just a few miles from my house, and and he is a business owner working on computers, and he runs as much open source as he can. So, I'll let you go.
All right, thank you. So, I've always been a huge fan of open source, been messing with Linux for, I don't know, since the early 90s when I used to have to beat my head over getting the mouse to work in X and Fedora. Yeah. Then I became a Linux admin for a company working in corporate IT around 1999 and fell in love with it. Once I got good at it, you know, you get hooked. When I started my company in 2003, one of my things I wanted to do was continue with open source because I was able to run it in a corporate environment and continue with my company. So pretty much everything we do internally, what we run our servers on, is all open source. FreeBSD runs our file server under. Yeah. Well, it's free NAS, so basically FreeBSD. I'm not a FreeBSD expert. my point-of-sale system, we wrote our own, because at the time when we switched over to this point-of-sale system, there just wasn't anything out there. Now, years later, I know there's probably a few projects, and we're debating out and continuing our project. I'd like to open source it, but the code is horrible. And
you could still open source it.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll get it cleaned up.
That's what we first realized. We haven't really wrote config files. We wrote the passwords into the...
Oh, right, my God.
Yeah.
Hard-coded password.
There's a reason I don't code a lot. And everything runs in a series of virtual machines. I'm using PHP VirtualBox for that. Then the virtual machines that spin up are like my mail server running Debian and a few other servers. The only thing really that we run closed source would be any graphics work we do. Sorry, I use Photoshop. I have a virtual machine running Windows 7 with Photoshop in it. Sorry, I have not found a good open source equivalent to do the level of graphics that we need to edit for doing web design. But on the everything else we use, the accounting software I'm using is the KMyMoney. It has great compatibility with downloading standard bank import files, so I can actually produce my P&Ls and everything on that. Works really well. And, of course, I can just export the data out of my point-of-sale because it just runs a MySQL backend. The other things we do is we switched from the Fog project to the Crucible WDS, which is for deploying it, because although we base ourselves on open source, the reality is we fix Windows all day. That's where it's at. That's where our clients are for the retail store, and, of course, with the most of the environments we're dealing with, due to the enterprise software that they run requiring Windows for a back end, that's what we service all day. But it doesn't mean we can't be open source on our side. You know, I'd love to push it more to my clients, but, you know, for example, I got a carpet company down the street. The enterprise program they use that manages their carpet, it does not have any support for Linux. So there's no way to run Linux on any of their desktops. And that kind of goes true for a lot of my clients that are niche businesses and things like that. So wherever we can, we've used it. We've actually put a lot of file servers in for small companies that are usually based on FreeNAS. I got a handful of them running it that works great. And the firewalls we recommend are pfSense. I deploy those. They make a great solution for the VPN, security-wise, updates. Never had a problem with them. Same with them. In-place upgrades have always gone really smooth. The pfSense boxes for my clients. For example, when the Heartbleed came out, you know, there was a vulnerability in the OpenVPN from OpenSSL. No problems doing any of the patches for my clients. So it's worked really smooth. And, of course, their Windows clients work really well. So to them, it's transparent. They really don't know what's running in the background. They're just happy that it's all running and working. And I'm happy when it's running and working. So.
Yep. Very good. So for accounting software, what do you use? Because in the business world, QuickBooks really has that locked up pretty much.
Yeah. And QuickBooks is a software that it's a love-hate relationship because a lot of the clients don't like it. It's a very overbloated program. The system requirements for it are just ridiculous. You're like, oh, you need 16 gigs of RAM to run the new version, you know? And of course, it's based on .NET, which breaks a lot. And we've had to reload a lot of systems just based on it. So I've always looked for another solution. I'm open to if anyone has suggestions, you know, send an email, send a message. KMyMoney's been the best one I found for everything I need to do to track all of my transactions. Because when it imports my bank account, you can set it up to automatically align a lot of things. It knows the Marathon gas stations I purchased at, so that goes into the fuel category as soon as I import it. So I spend less time doing my P&L because it drops all the ledger categories right in. It's actually a well-written program. It doesn't really have nice invoicing features that QuickBooks has, so I haven't been able to find a good open source solution I could recommend to my clients. I'd love to find one. I'd use a different one myself if I could that was more complete. But this is the best one I found. I liked it a lot better than GnuCash. Wasn't real happy with that one. But the KMyMoney, it's just a great project. I need to start producing some videos and tutorials on how to use it because I didn't find their documentation to be incredible. And I don't think there's many YouTube videos out there, and the ones I've seen weren't in English. So that's been on my to-do list because now that I've been using it for 4 years, before it was a series of open office spreadsheets. So, and I've got a lot of data in it, and it's never let me down. It works really well. It's fast, it's lightweight, and it's cross-compatible that they compile for all the versions.
Hey, Tom, have you ever tried Grisby?
No, I have not.
Okay, because Grisby, it's one, I think when I was doing a review of a distro, I can't remember which distro, there have been so many, last year, Grisby was installed, and it's a finance manager's accounting for everyone as the website. Now, I've never used it, so it may or may not suit your needs.
You know, I've used it in the past. I really like it, and it's used... Or it has double accounting.
Entry?
Yeah, double entry, and you can run multiple accounts, and you can import and export.
It's Grisby. Don't put in a Y.
Oh no!
You'll go somewhere you don't want to be.
Yeah, just don't.
Oh yeah, I'm very sorry. I should have spelled it for you.
Yeah,
and spared you that.
I'm glad you can't see my screen.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a real basic interface, but...
How does the KMI Money, how does that work with your payroll? Do you do your own payroll, or do you outsource that?
I do outsource my payroll, because I don't want to get with the taxes, and it does not support calculating payroll taxes. QuickBooks obviously has that as an advantage. I use a full-service accounting company to make my life easier, because taxes are harder to do. There's more rules than there are in anything else, so I actually outsource all my accounting to an accounting firm. Even if you looked up my tax ID, it shows up as my accountant's address, because all my state forms and everything just get sent to them. They process, they send all the checks, they even have a stamp with my name. They just tell me how much I'm paying. I was like, okay, it's non-negotiable, so just pay it. So same thing with the payroll. They for like the salaries, I just pick up the checks from them. They have them all done, pre-printed. I just have to hand them to the employees. Makes my life a little bit easier.
Now, your employees, are they hourly or salaried?
Salary and contract. Most of them are paid as contractors.
Okay. So then that's a set payment, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They get paid based on, well, it's a percentage of job.
Where payroll gets really wonky, at least in my experience, is when you have hourly employees, because that number always changes.
Yes. Yes, it does a lot. And with the contractors, it's my easiest, like my web developer and guys who build the wiring and infrastructure, they're just paid based on the job, which works out pretty well, because I've had each of them set up their own LLCs and independents, so I pay their companies. They work for me exclusively, but I didn't pay their companies. So it becomes a pass-through. Like, they keep taxes.
You make them set up an LLC, or can they use a DBA?
They can use a DBA. Whatever works for them, whatever's tax advantages for them. So I just send them over to my account, and I said, just talk to them. They'll talk to you about your life and tell you what to do. That's what they did for me. Yeah, taxes are not something I want to get involved in. It is nice that QuickBooks does have the payroll support, and it comes down to another reason that a lot of companies run it. The nice thing is the web version of QuickBooks, at least they can, if they did want to use open source, they can use the web version.
Now,
of QuickBooks.
The web version, I've never used it. I used to install QuickBooks for my clients, because everybody needs QuickBooks.
Yeah.
But I got out of business just as the web version was starting, so I've never had any experience with it. Does that need a 2S server to run?
That the web version, because it's all hosted by them.
It is.
Yeah,
so you can't host the web.
Right. They have They have no way to host it that way. And unfortunately, I know it's missing some features. I don't have the list. You go on the website, it's got a comparison. I know there's just some things it doesn't do, and so some people still have to run it. Like, I still don't think they have a good inventory module, so they have to run it locally. And if they're running QuickBooks point of sale with like registers and scan guns, they end up running QuickBooks locally. The web version doesn't support that.
Wow.
So,
and for your clients, when you're doing work at your clients, now I realize that in the real world, most of your desktop deployments are probably Windows.
Right.
But for their back ends, for their server side, do you use a lot of open source there also?
Yeah, whenever possible.
You can sneak it in?
Yeah, wherever I can sneak it in. We've got a few dozen like accounting offices and that are running FreeNAS file servers. If you've used the latest version of FreeNAS, it's really nice. You can create user permissions, groups. You can do a lot of the same stuff. Use it as essentially a domain controller in a Windows environment. So you can get that granular access. Go, okay, I want them to have read-only access to this folder and write access to this. So we've deployed that at some of the clients, and they're really happy with it. And for a file server, I just can't see the license fees and everything associated with Windows being paid. Just all they need to do is store files
exactly.
And have permissions.
You're going to pay all those fees just to run SharePoint.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And I know Microsoft's trying to reduce some of the entry costs with these essential servers and things like that, which have limits of like 25 users. But it's just such an... The updates take so long to load and everything else. They run these free NAS
boxes. And it's so resource intensive if you've ever seen the SharePoint server. So
yeah.
It's just crazy.
Oh, yeah. So we have actually a lot of Server 2012 installs that we manage for clients, and it's just bloated.
Server 2012. Whenever I have to do anything with that, it just drives me insane because the graphical environment by default is that freaking Metro environment.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. On a server. Give me a break.
Especially, we have a client with a 30-license terminal server, and they actually do it to run QuickBooks. They run it. It's a complicated setup I won't get into, but essentially we host it on 2012 server, and it runs QuickBooks, and everybody logs into it, and that thing is just a pain.
Wow.
It's got 32 gigs of RAM.
Probably use it to heat your whole office.
Yeah. It's a very fast server they purchased on there, but the licensing was just... I think the licensing for all that, because the terminal server licenses have increased so much, was close to the cost of the server, too, so...
Is that CALs or something like that?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Calginate. Okay.
Right. And when you have a small company doing that, do you do seat cals or machine cals?
It varies on what they're going to do. For them, it's just the user cal because they're everyone's a different user logging in from different computers. Okay. So if you tied it to their machine, it wouldn't.
Right, right, right.
Right. So you tie it to the user on that for their licensing.
Right. Because with schools, a lot of times I used to use machine cal.
Yeah. Because it's multiple people using one computer, so it's machine cal. These are multiple people RDPing in, so we did it the other way. And it's kind of weird. You actually got to buy user cals and terminal server cals. So the terminal server cals doesn't automatically give you a user cal, so you got to buy two licenses per person.
Crazy. Jeez. And well, when you're doing it for education, though, you get those way deep discounts.
Yes. Yes. This place tried to claim they were education. They tried to do all kinds of things. They said, do what you can to get the license cheaper. I mean, they thought I was marking them up. I said, no, here's a link. You can get them cheaper. I just install them. I don't care what you pay for them.
Exactly.
I wish it was a better solution for multiple people terminaling on on a Linux server, but of course because they run the Windows apps. But the own cloud is also something I've deployed for a few clients. I have a paranoid law firm.
Aren't they all?
Oh, this one's particularly got the tinfoil hat on, but for good reason. They work in, I don't know the technical term, lobby law. They help write the things you hate that go to Washington, and the companies contract them. I don't know exactly how it works. Like, companies contract them, and they help write the stuff so lobbyists can present stuff. Either way, because they work in Washington, they fear the government, and they said, we don't use Dropbox because, well, we don't.
Right.
And let's just say other people can see what's in there. And so they've always worried about that, and one of the solutions for them was running OwnCloud because it kept everything in-house for them.
Right. And even their remote workers could still connect to the OwnCloud.
Yes, and they wanted self-signed certificates because they really didn't like that. Now, this is before the Snowden revealed how the NSA was getting things. So essentially, the NSA has been able to say, don't go to the certificate authorities and say, we need a copy of that cert. Oh, and you can't tell me when we took a copy.
Right.
So they could essentially decrypt anything that wasn't done.
Right. They were getting the copies of the certs, so they could even man in the middle everything.
They can man in the middle of everything. So that's why they wanted even a self-sign. So they were aware of all this, which I thought was kind of cool. Like, this was, like I said, before the Snowden release, we started putting some of this stuff in. And so they kept everything like that, and I thought that was kind of fun to work with them, because I'm like, yay, they want all open source stuff. And the Windows clients for OwnCloud work great. I mean, we use OwnCloud at my office as well for our files, but I gotta admit, the Windows version seemed to work really, really smooth. There's even the version updates and everything else have gone really smooth with that too. I remember we had some hiccups when they did a major release. Some things had to be changed in some config files, but nothing major, so that's gone well.
You know, I run my own instance of OwnCloud here in the house, and it keeps all my laptops backed up all the time, and I love it. I even use it as my newsreader, too. There's an app you can add in for a newsreader.
I've never tried that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And one of the news items that came up was that the next version, 8.1, isn't going to support Windows Server natively.
Oh, really?
So you're going to, if you go and do that upgrade, you might have to do a little extra work.
Well, maybe it'll be kind of packaged up as a module
Windows
or something
server,
like that.
Though?
You know, I didn't read the article. I just saw the headline.
Well, it's a drive-by. Running it on a Linux box.
So it'll be fine. I'm sure it means, running it on it.
And I just switched this year when we got the latest version of FreeNAS, when we built our new RAID array. We moved my own cloud into it and running in a BSD jail. That works really, really well. It's really solid. It's all those consolidation things going, with our virtual machine running five other machines, that's a fairly good machine, but it's still running five other machines. And I said, let's see, you know, we built this beefy RAID server, and the fact that it's a RAID server with a lot of drives means it's got a lot of low latency, fast file syncing. And when we moved it over there, it works really, really well. I used the package installer they have right through FreeNAS to set it up. Absolutely the smoothest install ever.
And it's using ZFS, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the things that makes it so fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
ZFS and enough RAM to handle the ZFS.
Well,
so
that's a given. You got to have the RAM to run ZFS.
Yeah, 1 gig per terabyte.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Is that the rule of thumb?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Rule of thumb is 1 gig per terabyte. We went a little over that because we're running these things in the jails, but the jails seem to be fairly efficient. We also run the Crucible WDS, the deployment system, in that as well. I got to redo the guy's documentation who made Crucible WDS for the FreeBSD. He's got typos. They're, if you think you're going to, it's stuff he says you can copy paste, but you can't because it's the way he set up it. And there's a couple different ways I set it up, and I got to recreate the document. I want to donate back and create the documentation for it. Quisher, who you'd mentioned earlier, actually, I sent him on that project, and he set it up. He set it up the way I want to set it up, which is instead of running it on BSD, they actually have an updater if you run it on a standard distribution. So I want to put it to a standard distribution, but point it through the, because it uses NFS shares, point the NFS shares over to the FreeNAS box. Because the advantage of that is we have so many streams going at once, is keeping it fast by pulling it off the RAID server as pulling it off to a standard standalone box.
Now, you're moving a lot of data in your business. Mm-hmm. And internal to the business, do you use fiber or are you still on copper?
Still on copper, just everything's gigabit switches.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fast enough. For example, we can Windows 7 or Windows 8, actually, because they're about the same size, we can reload a machine in under 9 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So it's still pretty fast. And if the person has an SSD, because the limit isn't our copper,
it's their system. It's the disk I.O.
Right.
It's always the disk I.O.
It's always the disk I.O. So with the RAID, we're able to push it at a pretty high rate. I think the fastest we've got one done is in 5.5 minutes with an SSD and an i7. So we've had some machines we can image even faster, which is nice. But then once you get so many concurrent machines, topped off with we're dumping files back and forth for clients across the network.
Right.
Yeah. But because the computers only come in with gigabit, there's not much point in moving beyond that.
Okay.
At least I don't see it just yet. Maybe eventually.
Well, because you could move the data in bulk to the switch.
Yeah.
And then the switch would be your slowdown point, but then the switch is breaking it out anyway.
Right.
Anyway.
No, these are challenges as we get busier and busier. You know, the majority of time we spend waiting because when people come in to get their computers, even if we are reimaging them, nobody backs up anything. That is an absolute guarantee. So we're always moving 20, 30, 40, 50 gigs at a time over our network off of their computers, getting it backed up. And we use PXE boot. We'll boot Ubuntu off PXE. Get their files. There's no point in booting up Windows. It's broken. It's very broken. Especially Windows 8. The Windows 8 updates break regularly. Yeah. Because people shut them off because they're impatient because they take a ridiculous amount of time to install the updates. So they just unplug it, which for Windows 8, its recovery for that is worse than ever.
Hopefully
this fixes Windows 10. So there's a common procedure when people bring things in is boot it off Linux because, like I said, it's an unbootable machine. Boot it off Linux. Dump everything across to the server. So everything gets dumped across. As soon as it's dumped across,
do you use something like DD Rescue for that? What do you?
No, because the hard drive is completely readable. It's just Windows doesn't boot.
Okay.
So it's rare
so
that the
hard
drive. So
you're just dumping their data off.
Yeah, we're just dumping the data off. So we're just pushing the data across network. So at any given time, as we're fairly busy, there's always like three or four computers dumping data or receiving data back. Because after you reload it, you reverse the process and start dumping
across the other way. Now, when you're doing that, are you only doing like their home directories?
Yes.
Okay, so if they have data in wacky places, you're not going to guarantee you
we
get that.
We ask them if they have data in anywhere else.
Yeah, but they never know.
They never know. we try to do a QuickBooks because QuickBooks has decided with the latest versions to save under public and a series of subfolders under public documents, Intuit, and things like that, which confuse a lot of people. Because even backup programs by default, if you load something like iDrive for backup, it goes, okay, let me just back up your home folder. Oh, by the way, QuickBooks didn't put it in the home folder. Previously, QuickBooks put it in the program files.
Right.
And now it's saving it under public, which, of course, creates...
Well, being under program, I always used to drive me crazy. I would just link it over to a file in their home directory.
Right. So we evaluate if they're a business user or if they're just a home user to go, I don't know, I save everything, I save all my pictures on there. So 99% of the time, we're just going to grab their home directories, pull that. We have a Python script that needs to be rewritten a little bit that we run... that will just grab it with skipping like the app data because there's nothing good in there unless they're running Outlook.
Right.
It also skips all the temp files. I got to update it a little bit for Windows 8. It broke, and I'm not good at Python, and my friend that wrote it, it's not around. It's on my to-do list, though. But mostly it's just grab it, dump it, and then we have another script on the server because we wait till people pick up their computers before we dump it. And, of course, you end up with all this data stored in there, and it's all locked down and passworded. Then we have a script that runs after 30 days to start dumping their data back away after they pick up their computer and start deleting it all. So
it's you not know, on your server.
Right.
If you need now, Python help, Mary's an expert at Python.
Yeah, okay. I took a course.
All right.
I just got my diploma. Oh, yes, diploma. It said with distinction. I took one course.
You got one course more than me.
Now, deleting the customer data, do you do that for your customer's peace of mind or just to save space?
Both.
Okay.
Both. We tell them we have that, and we've had people say, I don't want any of it retained. I have no problem. I will retain it. As soon as you walk out the door, I can delete it. Just by default, we do it for 30 days because what happens is people, we've had people, we've copied the data back, and they literally erased their hard drive. We had a guy, it was just funny, he picks his computer up, he took it home, he put the Dell CD in, and he erased it,
what?
And then complained we didn't put his data back, and I'm like, bring it back in, what do you mean your data's not there? And he says, yeah, no, the drivers are loaded, and we look, and the Dell CD's still in there. He just ran the recovery CD. People do the strangest things. So, of course, we're like, well, you erased it. He goes, well, I thought that's what I had to do. I'm like, no, that's what you paid us to do, is erase and reload and set it back up. So don't worry, we'll start the process over.
So did you charge him again?
No, we were nice. We generally give them 14 days to break it, and we'll just cover it, because it's not worth the argument
exactly.
type thing.
Exactly, I used to do the same thing.
Yeah, my employees are like, oh, they're just going to keep bringing it back, and I'm like, no, they won't. And statistically, it's worked out, so maybe 1 out of 100 people brings it back because they take it home and just do something. Like, they had viruses that they had tried to download something to get this movie program running.
Yeah. And then they do the same thing
again. They do the same thing, yeah. Another guy was really funny. He was looking for a free version of Minecraft for his kids. So he brings it in. First, he found MinecraftFree.exe. And screws his computer up. So, you know, we fix it, and he goes home, and he loads the same thing. And I told him, I said, you know, we charge flat rate $50 for a virus from a device. You know, Minecraft's less than $50. Don't throw that out there.
You thought you paid $100.
Yeah. So, you know, because he did it, like, immediately, we fixed it for free again for him. But this is one of the reasons we don't delete their data for 30 days, because, well, people.
Right.
Yeah. So sometimes there's just magic on there. I mean, we're helpful as possible to people, but there is the things you have to do like that. So you kind of run into that issue sometimes.
Very good. Another thing I used to do for my clients a lot was I put a lot of stuff on the invoice, but then if it's little dinky stuff, I then zero cost it. And
yeah.
Say, oh, I threw this all in for you because it makes it look better. And
yeah, yeah. We have a lot of canned. Our invoice system's freeform, and so we get a lot of canned stuff that gets auto filled in.
Yeah.
We're actually using. We've integrated is it called Tiny MCE Editor? It's an open source one. That's actually what writes our invoices. Because, like I said, we Frankensteined a lot of this together. I got the framework from a guy like 10 years ago, and we just started Frankensteining it together and had to update lots of things. And, like I said, the code's become very, very sloppy. I've talked to people that seem to be an interest in open sourcing it. It takes a lot of sanitation to get the code fixed, but I'm more than willing to. I have no problem giving away or putting money behind a project if I find the right developer for it.
What's it written in?
All PHP.
All PHP.
But it needs a rewrite.
You wanted to be in your own little special hell.
Yeah, I want to be in my own special hell. We started in PHP. It's still in PHP. No, I don't have a problem rewriting another language that, you know, maybe a little bit less complicated or something like Python.
Go for the gusto. Rewrite it in Perl.
Yeah. Perl makes my eyes cross. I can at least edit PHP. It's been a, you know, work in progress. One of the things we focused on, and I have not seen other point of sale like this, was the way we focus on efficiency with it. So if a customer comes in, if they're a returning customer, we just use a price gun to put tag numbers under and assign everyone a customer number. So right at the top, you just punch in their 4-digit customer number and enter, and boom, all their history, everything's pulled up, all their quotes they've ever done. So we can say, hey, you know, hi, Ed, you've been here since 2008 was the last time we've seen you. This is what we did.
I used to do the same thing.
Yeah, so the fact that it pulls up very, very fast, very efficient, being all web-based means it's very, very portable, easy to access. We have a VPN so it can be accessed outside. And then we have inside there, we have it pushed into the database. We can upload any file. So if we set up a router, we download the config for your router and upload it in there. So for any client we've deployed pfSense, we have the last backup stored inside our Sony cell. So there's not any separate files. So it's not just, network settings configured in there like a freeform text file, which we can do as well. We actually can put their files in there. And that becomes very, very handy when you're on site and you're like, okay, this is just broke. Oh, here's the download file for it. Because we use Unify, if you haven't used them for the wireless, we have each Unify, we download all the settings and save it to their customer file. That way we go out there, we can just load up Unify on our laptop with their settings and reset up all of their Unify systems.
Oh, so, wow, that's really slick.
Those are the features that are separate. Like any of the other ones, they go, you can't upload any files to this. I'm like, well, if I can't upload files, then that kind of kills it for me, because that's a feature we use for our business clients, like just constantly.
Right, sure. Well, that's about all I have. Do you guys have any?
No, you asked all the questions I was going to ask.
All right.
Yeah, Cedar wanted a question. I think you asked it, though.
Well, if you want to plug your business and then your podcast.
Yeah. I don't have any podcasts. I've been on a Podnuts.
You're like YouTube channel. Or
yeah, YouTube channel. Oh, I do use Caden Live, so I do open source editing on there. So a combination of Caden Live and Audacity to clean up the audio. So I try to get it as clean as possible and cut it all out. I'm going to be doing some more videos on how to do that, because I got people requesting some tutorials on it. And I said, okay, I sat down and learned a lot of it. There's a couple people doing some tutorials on there, but unfortunately a lot of them were done 2 or 3 years ago. Well, there's some version differences, so when you're watching a tutorial, you're like, the menu's not there, or it looks different now.
That option is gone, yeah.
That option's gone, yeah. So I want to do some updated ones, because I've become fairly proficient at it. So if you go to my website, lawrencesystems.com, there's a link to my YouTube channel called Tech Knowledge, and I've just been putting more and more stuff on there, but I'm going to start doing a lot more Linux tutorials. I started out with more of a focus on general users for things, but I'm realizing there's a demand for some of the other open source stuff I've spent a lot of time learning, so definitely I'm going to put a lot more of that on there. I'm also going to be doing some open source projects. Have you seen the Raspberry Spy project?
No, I haven't.
No.
So it's a really slick system for creating your own home security or business security system based on a Raspberry Pi. They sell these kits. And so I might get some of those, and I might look at doing it instead of having a standard alarm company, so it sends notices right to your phone. It even supports some of the image capture. So if you put a camera on there, as the motion sensor goes off, it can send the image to your phone. And it's got some home automation and an app for it.
A Raspberry Pi is so low-powered, though. How does that work? Is that like one Pi per device, one Pi per two or three? Because you couldn't run like a whole security system off one Pi.
Yes, and that's what it does. It's got all the hookups, so you can get all the motion sensors hooked up, all the window trip, the door trip, all the magnet sensors. They tie all into it, and they have the whole kit. So then that Raspberry Pi can then send you a message, and of course, being low power, if the building loses power, it can still send you notices and things like that, provided your internet doesn't go down.
So it could handle the 30 or 40 devices.
Yeah.
That are going to be in a... Wow, that is pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, man, the new version 2, is a quad-core with a gig of RAM and
Raspberry Pi. I'm still thinking of the 256 megabyte.
Right.
I've got the 512 megabyte. That's like the original.
I know, but I'm old. I get stuck on something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's all open source. That's one of the other projects we're going to work on, so put that in there. And I got to start documenting all the things I do. So,
Tom, as far as what's running on that Raspberry Pi, I mean, does it include... I know ZoneMinder was one of the open source projects for that motion detection as far as security setups go. Is it running that, or
No, it doesn't run ZoneMinder. It's because it's only looking at like some of the basics. I know it's using some of the same libraries ZoneMinder uses, but it doesn't have like full HD camera support or anything like that. They're talking about really basic cameras, camera and motion sensor support. So more or less, it's just a monitoring looking for trips.
Okay.
So it goes up that switch was
Raspberry
open.
Pi is Raspberry Pi is really good for hardware monitoring, hardware motion detectors, because with the IO ports on the Raspberry Pi instead of using a camera.
So it's looking for like just basic motion detection and break glass and things like that.
Yeah, I just like the fact that it notifies. Right now, the security system we use is our not a closed source DVR. I've tried ZoneMinder. I couldn't get it to work the way I wanted it to. So we have a DVR that notifies me of any motion during certain hours, and it sends a capture to my phone, which is cool. But I want, I want to build something.
Yeah,
sure.
Very cool.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thank you. And what was your business again?
LawrenceSystems.com. And Warren Systems and PC Pickup. So.
And your YouTube channel?
The Tech Knowledge. TECK knowledge.com. You can, there's a link right on my website. You go to lawrencesystems.com and you'll, I put the links to all the stuff on there.
Right,
and I have a blog on there where I post, so the blog has descriptions of what's going to be in the YouTube.
Oh, and are they tied in together?
Yeah, they're all integrated together. So.
Oh, wow. Cool. Excellent.
Very good.
Yeah, thank awesome.
You. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, I guess we're going on to the news.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
And so, do we guys have any news articles?
I have a couple, three.
Yeah, I've got a couple.
All right, well, go ahead, Mary.
All right. This first one kind of cracked me up. this was in Engadget.com, and it's Russia and China promise not to hack each other. And I look at the picture, and Putin's arm, one of his hands, he's shaking hands with the Chinese premier, but his other hand looks to be behind his back,
his
and I'm thinking,
fingers are crossed.
Fingers are crossed. Yeah. Yeah, so there'll be a link to that. It just kind of cracked me up, and I think what's happened, and I realize this is not really open source related directly, but what happened is that with the whole Ukraine situation, and the fact that that has seriously damaged Russia's relationship with Europe as well as the U.S., it has pushed him. It has pushed him toward China, and so when I saw that,
don't get me started on that Ukraine thing.
Okay, I won't.
We should have put troops on the ground. Anyway,
okay. Excellent. Well, then we'll move right on.
No, literally, by treaty.
Did I get you started?
Yes, you did. We were obligated to put troops on the. We were obligated to put troops on the ground by treaty, and we didn't do it.
I didn't read that.
Yes.
Uh huh. Okay. Well, I guess we should have. but anyway,
when they agreed to give all their nuclear weapons up, that was part of the treaty.
Oh, okay.
That we would defend them. Defend them.
Okay. Well. Something went wrong there.
Yeah, we welched.
Okay. All right. Well, then the other I didn't expect that discussion. The other news item I have is Microsoft brings Android and iOS apps to Windows 10.
Ooh.
Yes. I found this on Ars Technica. It's a little old. It's about a week and a half old, but I thought it warranted a note. There are a couple of things that a couple of kind of projects, or at least aspects to this larger initiative that Microsoft has going, and includes the tool chain and this middleware layer that's going to provide the APIs that the Apple, the iOS apps expect, so that developers then can go ahead and put this stuff together, plug it into that, and have these available on Windows and.
Yeah, they're trying to everything they can to save that Windows phone, aren't they?
And Project Astoria, Project Astoria is the same thing for Android. So, so they've got that that going, and I guess it'll be kind of interesting to see if that happens. But that's usually what you have to do when you're running a distant third.
Well, very, very distant.
They're also doing it because they really want to push Azure to run as the back end for Android and iOS apps. So they're trying to lure developers over to Azure. Mm-hmm. And they've done such things as even they had a lot of talk of Docker at the Build conference, and they're trying to work with all the open source community going, hey, all those things you love that you run over on, Amazon Cloud Services, you'll be able to run them on Azure. So come on over to the Azure side and run these iOS apps and everything else. Build your back end on our platform, because software as a service is their goal. So that's one of their big pushes in Windows 10, to be able to, hey, you can even run on Windows 10 these Android apps and iOS apps. It's all part of a tie-in they announced over at Build.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's one thing I think this year it's become particularly noticeable is that they have really kind of moved, Microsoft, that is, has really moved to, I think, get rid of some those barriers, or at least some of those barriers to the open source community. Because, well, as you know, years ago, Linux was the cancer and all this kind of thing. And although Linux itself it never really became the desktop of choice across the board for everybody, I think that the whole open source initiative that Linux is a part of really has driven a whole bunch of things and is really a disruptor. And I think this is just another aspect of it that we're seeing.
Beware.
Well,
wolf in sheep's clothing. That's all I have to say on that.
I appreciate that. And I always look at these things with a little bit of a suspicious eye.
Yes.
But on the other hand, I think Microsoft is recognizing that their closed source, approach to things is, and the fact that they kind of sat on their laurels for years. I mean, they were the default operating system. They had all this stuff and they just got complacent. And things have caught up, things have changed, and now they're playing catch up, and this is one way to try.
Well, they released that Linux, they use tools for dev and Linux, which is unheard of for them. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, wow, actually, here's Microsoft tools running on Ubuntu to develop in. That's mm-hmm. that's big change for them.
It is.
Like he said, I'm a little suspicious.
Yeah.
Beware.
Yeah, and I think a lot of open source.
You know, their major revenue stream is still sticking up on.
Oh, you are so right.
Builders.
Yeah.
Yes.
So. Yeah, that
$1 billion from Samsung alone.
Yeah.
That annoys the heck out of me, and
yes.
I don't know why people don't stand up and just say, prove it.
Nobody's got the deep enough pockets. That's why they won't go after Google.
Yes.
Yeah.
Google
and,
does.
Yeah. I don't know why Google doesn't say, we'll indemnify you, you know, as far as those people. Of course, that's.
That opens up a whole can of beans.
Yeah, you're right. It does. From a legal perspective, yeah. So, anyway, so that was my my one story, and then when we get around to KDE Corner, I've got a couple things there. So
cool.
All right.
What I saw was there's a new Linux rootkit that leverages GPUs to hide, and now for the real title that it should have been is this is a proof of concept. It is not in the wild. Okay. A team of developers has created a rootkit for Linux systems that uses processing power and memory of graphics cards inside of GPUs in order to remain hidden. The rootkit called Jellyfish is a proof of concept designed to demonstrate that completely running malware on GPUs. So, and that is from computerworld.com. There'll be a link in the show notes if I remember to put it up. I still owe you my links from last time.
Oh, I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah. So, and my second one is Open Office development is looking grim as developers flock to LibreOffice. And this is from InfoWorld.com. And Open Office used to be the best free alternative to Microsoft's Office, but now it seems to be falling on hard times. Development on the open source productivity suite is down to just 16 people. They only have 16 developers.
Well, and here's the problem with that, besides the obvious, is that when you go out into the real world, people who are using an open source office suite, they're using Open Office. They have not gotten the word that LibreOffice is the, I'm talking about regular people. I'm not talking about Linux geeks.
Then that would bode for the other direction.
But my point is that there are still a fair number of people out there that are just regular Joes, that are using OpenOffice and don't realize that, hey, at some point this may become dormant.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's
part of the Apache project now, so it's not going to probably become dormant. But what the
they need to go back together.
What this article really wants you to note is that on their last release for OpenOffice, there were 381 change sets last year.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. Comparison. LibreOffice and the other open source saw 22,134 change sets.
Ooh.
So it's the level of development is very, very different.
Yeah, no, but, you know, again, my only concern is that when you're looking for adoption and that type of thing in the general public, the non-techie general public, all they know is OpenOffice because it was out there first. And the fact that LibreOffice forked off a few years ago, that's lost on them.
When OpenOffice became so stagnant.
Right, but see, those folks didn't get that. They didn't get the memo because they just don't look for that kind of thing. So in a way, that's in my opinion, then that's making that's kind of a little black eye for open source in a way, just as far as the perception of it being a kind of a modern or open office, I should say, being a modern Word, you know, Microsoft Office compatible. System.
And you're very correct because we actually have a lot of businesses that run OpenOffice.
Exactly.
And they don't, if you said LibreOffice, they go, huh?
Yeah.
And they don't understand it's essentially, you know, very similar. You're going to still create the ODF documents that are compatible. But we use OpenOffice. We don't really want that other thing. It says something different, so it bothers them because it's what they're used to. Because I have a lot of clients, and because of their, they just need basic spreadsheets and things like that. They simply run OpenOffice. That's just what's easy for them.
So that's switching about it.
And I was actually pulled up Ninite, where a lot of people used to install. OpenOffice is on top, LibreOffice is at the bottom, and it's by default what people check. My guys a lot of times out of habit will install OpenOffice because they look at this OpenOffice and put it on there. But yeah, I try to push for the LibreOffice, newer, more support, much better document support for importing.
The Microsoft, when you're trying to import and export to Microsoft formats, LibreOffice just hands down way better.
Depends.
Give me an example where OpenOffice is better.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just giving you... never mind. Yeah. No, that's what I get. That is what I get for segueing. I was looking at my KDE corner, and I segued back into the conversation. I'm just talking about... never mind. I'm not talking about a darn thing.
Okay. Right.
But anyway, so... But thanks for that story, Matt. I mean, that's a... See, I really would like to see those two projects come back together. I don't know if it's possible or not, because...
out of the code bases, it drifts so far.
Well, that's just it. I mean, there may be some acrimony. There may be a number of other factors.
I don't think there's acrimony. I just think that the code bases have drifted so far that reassembling that into one project would be just...
Probably difficult. All right.
Anyway, that's all I have.
Cool. So, Mary, what do you have for your kitty corner?
Oh, I was just, do you have anything? Oh, you got your...
I don't have any news. I have a security bit.
Okay. Well, I have got, let's see, KDE Frameworks 5.10.0 was released this past week, and KDE Frameworks is basically a set of libraries that interact with Qt or Qt to provide KDE functionality. So that came out. Also, another thing that I noted too, for anybody who uses KDE and uses KWallet, which I sometimes find useful and sometimes find very annoying, because whenever I open Chrome, KWallet pops up and wants access or wants to...
As opposed to KDE Wallet, which is very different. KDE Wallet saves your passwords.
Well, KDE Wallet is KDE Wallet. It's a little brown wallet.
KWallet?
No, yeah.
Not what K-Wallet? Is KWallet? Because I open KDE Wallet to fill my passwords. It's not KWallet. KWallet's for money, isn't it?
No, Matt. KWallet is the KDE password.
Is it really?
Yes, it is.
I knew that. I was just testing.
Okay. Did I pass?
Yeah. Flying colors.
Anyway, but what's kind of interesting is that it hasn't had a facelift for quite a while. And what they're going to do now is they are going to, apparently the GNOME project has...
Don't screw with me. What?
No. They have some design, they've got some design flaws. What they're going to do is they're going to, apparently the GNOME project has released a, kind of a back end that does the same kind of thing. So what the KDE project is going to do is they're going to take that and they're going to put on
word from GDK to Qt.
Well, I think that's what eventually is going to happen. But it's a new system that's going to replace KWallet, and it's going to be called K Secret Service.
Oh my God! Well, I still have KWallet. That's all I want to know.
Yeah. So anyway, but it's the guy whose blog post I'm referring to here. He's in the process of redefining its architecture, and he plans to post it on the KDE developer mailing list as well as on his blog as this moves along. But I just wanted to give a heads up that's coming down the pike. And then the last KDE corner item I've got is Krita. They are initiating another Kickstarter campaign, or at least a little fundraising campaign, to bring some additional... They want to extend the animation capabilities of the of that project or that software. So they're initiating this fundraiser activity. I think the one they ran last year, they got 20,000 euros, which is probably about maybe $25,000 U.S. dollars that they were able to collect to add some functionality to it last year. So it's kind of an interesting approach to maybe the donation thing that I always talk about, where, you know, I always say throw $5 in and blah, blah, blah. People may or may not do that, but it looks to me like they really get a good response when they use the focused, concentrated donation effort like a Kickstarter. So, So anyway, that's my KDE corner.
All right.
Yeah, cool. All right, so I have...
That would be you, Tony.
Back to you, Tony. I was supposed to say that, wasn't I?
All right.
So I have one security bit. It's from the SANS Institute.
Oh, yeah.
And they're a big like security researching group. Mm-hmm. And their one post says, "How security aware are you?" And they have four different little like quizzes you can do. Mm-hmm. So I haven't gone through them yet. So what I want to do is everybody else take the quizzes. I'll take them too, and then we'll come back and see how it goes.
All right, send me
right
a link.
Right now?
Yeah, it's in the show. No, not right now.
send me a link.
Yeah, it's in the show notes.
So
but there's one.
The show notes?
There's one on phishing.
And we're all on our honor too. We can't like cheat.
Right.
Okay.
There's one on phishing. There's one on spyware. There's one on identity theft.
It's not cheating unless
you get caught. Oh.
And there's one on social networks.
Okay.
So, yeah. Check it out.
Should be good. All right.
And I guess we're going
Hang on a minute now. So, just to confirm what we're going to do with our results, so we're going to report back next episode and see how we did.
Yeah. Yep. And then the audience, too, you guys check it out and then see how you compare against how we did.
That could make for some interesting conversation.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
Okay. I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. I was reading Twitter.
You Twitter. Okay.
All right.
It's listener feedback time.
And listener feedback time.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
And our phone number is 734-258-7009.
Mary likes that. That's why I said that.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. So, did we have any listener feedback?
Yes.
Matt said definitively.
Let's see. Where's my SMLR folder? My SMLR folder's gone.
One thing we didn't mention because it occurred after our last podcast is that we had a chance, or at least I had a chance, to meet the person who packages Scientific Linux.
Oh, yeah.
Connie C. And she happened to be attending PenguinCon, and we were sitting in the What's New with KDE 5 session, which never occurred because the presenter had to go to the hospital with his wife or some family member, something along those lines. Yeah. So while we were talking quietly amongst ourselves, she was right behind me, and we started chatting. So hopefully she'll be presenting at next year's PenguinCon. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Something happened, and I lost the user's comment. I only have mine and Mary's replies to his comment.
Oh, well, why don't you read our replies? We'll figure it out. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, that was about, go ahead, Matt.
He wanted to know if there were any pictures of me in costume or you in costume.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In costume, us in costume.
Yeah, I said that you were dressed as a geek and you looked the part or something like that.
This is actually one of the t-shirts I wore.
This is
Michelle, Amaze Your Friends.
I got this that Saturday, and then I wore it under my KDE sweatshirt, which made me look huge. But this says "Got Free BSD" and a question mark. So
yeah,
but no, we don't participate in the cosplay. I only go to the technical tracks at home at Home Depot.
Why Home Depot tracks?
It's because your shirt is orange, and that's the Home Depot's color.
PenguinCon. I only go to the tech track at PenguinCon.
Same here. Tech track. I did go to some of the food ones, so the how they do the liquor infusion.
How was that?
I have been to some of the food ones.
How was that? I like to go to some of those other ones, too.
They had to check my ID to eat the pickles, and it was absolutely worth it. And we have now made some. We already made our first batch. So
of liquor-infused pickles?
Yes. Those take longer, but we made the liquor-infused fruits. We've been making them at home. My wife's got the table all messy with all this stuff. It's really good.
You know what's really good, and I've got a great recipe for it that I'll send to you if you want it? Skittles vodka.
Yes, I've done that before too. Okay. Skittles vodka is good.
Yeah. Hey, in 25 words or less, as far as infusing fruits with liquor, you just dip them in there, or what is it?
Really simple. get a pan,
mm-hmm.
pour the liquor in the pan. Pour the liquor in the pan, cut up the fruit, put the fruit in the pan, cover it so things don't get in it, and in 2 weeks, pour it in and filter and drink.
Wow.
Does it have to be refrigerated or not refrigerated?
So you can drink the liquor and eat the fruit.
You do not want to eat the fruit.
Because it
tastes awful. No, it's actually, it doesn't rot.
Oh, okay.
It does preserve it.
Okay.
Unfortunately, like, we made strawberries, and the strawberries turn white, essentially, when they're done. Because
it all leaches out.
Because it all leaches out. So it's just the texture of a strawberry without the flavor of strawberry, so it's really, really gross. The liquor tastes great.
It's funny.
Yeah, I tried eating some of the strawberries, and like, these are disgusting. It's like there's all the things that a strawberry tastes like, but there's without the flavor. It's like, I wanted
to go to that session, and I ended up going to. It's probably your lecture, Matt.
I'm from the sticks, you know, right? In case any of you forgot. We used to do this with peaches and moonshine.
Peaches and moonshine.
My wife chose vodka, but I'm thinking Everclear will make the next best. She didn't get the best vodka, and I'm like, honey, at least start with something good. But Everclear's probably good because, you know, absolutely a pure and might absorb better. But, like, the pickles take, I think, about a month to make the pickles on there. But the cucumber-infused liquor's amazing.
Peaches and moonshine, if you're going to try it.
Yes. Sounds good.
Any particular brand?
Yeah, Bob's from the Still Out Back.
Yes. My own.
All right, I'll look for that at the store. Bob's from the Still Out Back. Oh, that'd be a good name, though, you know?
It's all yours, Mary Runler.
All right. Anyway, but thanks for that info, Tom.
Yeah. I don't know. That's all I saw. I didn't see anything else.
There was nothing else. That was the only one.
Probably part of it was that I didn't get the show out for a week.
I did notice that, but I wasn't going to say anything.
We figured you were just busy. How's your classes going? Are you still going to classes or did you drop out?
Semester's over, so I'm not taking summer classes.
Oh, good.
So
your Cisco thing. You'll be jamming that. Okay.
And then in the fall, it's when my when I'll start taking classes again.
And how much?
I'm going for my master's in IA, information assurance. But
so how much you got left?
At least 2 years, depending on everything lines up. Two to three years.
I could be dead by then.
Well, I'm taking everything half time.
Okay.
You know.
You're not going full time at all. Like you're not carrying 12 credit hours, right?
No, I have to have 6 credits to get student loans, so I have to take at least 2 classes each semester.
Where are you going to school at?
Eastern Michigan University.
Okay.
Cool. Are you going all the way out to Eastern, or are you doing it at one of their satellite campuses?
This last semester, I had to do it all on campus in Ypsilanti. Last semester one was at online and one was, actually at Henry Ford Village.
Oh, that's good.
Or more Greenfield Village.
A little more convenient.
Yeah. It was actually a really cool class.
Mm-hmm.
How technology destroyed the world.
That was actually part of it. Yeah. That was a few articles and then, but it was like how technology advanced throughout the history. And it's not technology like computers and electronics. It's just in general how things got better, you know, like from farming, from going with digging with your hands to using a plow and using, you know,
large machines.
Up.
And Henry Ford's a great place to study that because they have the big machines there.
Exactly.
That's just amazing.
And in the village, they have the farms from going back, you know, at the colonial age all the way up through the 1700s. And so it's very cool.
Right, and if I remember correctly, at Henry Ford Village or Greenfield Village, they have they explain about all the ribbon farms in Detroit in one of the sections of it that I found very interesting.
I don't remember that part, but a ribbon farm. What is that?
Maybe I read it somewhere else, and I'm just.
It could very well be that. Well, the ribbon farms were just these very narrow plots of land that came directly off the river.
Right, because they needed access to the river to get their vegetables to market.
So
they all had these really skinny, really long farms.
Yeah.
And they called them ribbon farms because it's like a ribbon.
I think it created issues when Detroit was growing.
Yes,
it created issues as far as property and land.
Because one farmer would sell, and the other ones around him wouldn't sell, and so street streets mm-hmm. would be long and take you a long way to get around.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, silly. Anyway, that explains it, too.
that whole northeast side of Detroit there, yeah. why it's so messed up, really.
Yeah. Okay. So, and that was our, we've gone through the listener feedback segment.
Yep. So then we're on to the music.
Yeah.
Right, that's our, ooh.
Featured music of the week.
And Mary sent us the suggestion for music this week.
I did.
Like you do every week, almost.
Like you do every week. Well, just a thought. But it's very apropos because OpenBSD 5.7 was just released. And as we mentioned earlier, those guys, there's a bunch of talented guys up there in Canada. Was it Alberta, I think, is where these guys are based out of? OpenBSD, is that right? Is it Calgary? Or do I have
I'm not
it
sure where.
I don't know where the music is based out of, yeah. but Theodore Ra is Canadian.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so yeah, this one is called Sourcefish.
That's right. And the word's fish. Open source fish.
Fish.
Oh.
F-I-S-H. Yeah.
They're definitely saying
as
fish.
Opposed to biatch.
Right.
To the fact that they're still finding all those bugs in OpenSSL, and when that first one hit the bricks and it showed all the really bad stuff going on in OpenSSL, the OpenBSD people said, whoa, we're done with OpenSSL, and they took the OpenSSL code and stripped all the crap out of it and rebuilt it as LibreSSL.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It, all right. Well, LibreSSL hasn't been widely adopted yet, has it?
No, but it's very readily adopted. All you've got to do is install it instead of OpenSSL.
Right, but this is the same thing that we talked when we talked about OpenOffice versus LibreOffice.
It just needs to get known, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's like when OpenBSD was having that fundraiser before, and I said, hey, did you use OpenSSH lately?
Mm-hmm.
If you did, give them money, because that's them, you know.
And, or switch.
And,
but yeah.
And it's just going to, it'll become known as the thing to use, I'm sure.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, very cool. All right. So, you've come to the end of the show.
And so have we.
Yes, thankfully.
Yeah, you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 151.
A guest.
we didn't go with anything better, so I guessed it is.
Some open source and business stuff we talked about.
Yeah.
A guest with some open source and business stuff.
Yeah.
It's a little long for a title.
Tom's Hardware.
Yeah. I missed the boat on that one.
I think it's mistaken, Mary.
Shoot.
All right. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
Saying, see you next time.
I don't know how you got
it. You can definitely see how you can make that mistake. No, I didn't. Tony, I gotta be honest. I made the same mistake in that
video. I'm not sure they're saying fish.
I vote that they are.
All right, Mary, you gonna do the
intro?
Intro. That's another thing.
Yeah.
After we do the show, Mary then records the
intro.
We
kind of contribute our little pieces.
We know what we
talked
about.
Yeah, what did we talk about?
I don't remember.
Open source fishes.
Yeah.
That could be a title, too.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Open source fishes.
Open source fish.
Yeah. Should I put BB, or no, FISH?
Yeah, or you can use a Grolix and just put the exclamations, you know, the open source, whatever.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tony Bemis, and Matt Bender.
Bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.
Hi, folks, this is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open. open source. Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.